This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Hey, all right. Welcome to Busted Pencils. Actually, tonight it's Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and here with us, but not actually with us, is Dr. Tim Slecker. He's in transit right now, and he may pop on if he does. Awesome. If not, we got this tonight. Anya and Dr. Johnny here. Anya on the boards. It's the beginning of a great week. We're coming off of Mother's Day weekend. Probably some great weather around the country too. Listener, especially in Wisconsin. How was it, Anya? Was it okay in Wisconsin?
You know, the weekend was very nice. We had a fairly balmy, fairly nice Mother's Day and Mother's Day Saturday. But I got to say, today we had some hail out here in Wisconsin. I have genuinely not seen hail since I think like I was a little kid. It felt like I came into the office. We've got these big windows and there was hail. It was truly something else. I saw a young dog who I think it was also their first time seeing hail. I think we had about the same reaction. Our hair stood on end. So not great weather, but getting better, headed towards summer.
All right, great. Well, you know what they say, no matter what the season, just wait a second, you know, take a deep breath and the weather's going to change in the Midwest, especially in the Great Lakes area. Which brings us to some exciting stuff because we have a great guest with us tonight. I'm going to get to that. But speaking of great guests and chopping it up, whatever the weather is, you know, in Madison, you could stop by the Minocqua Brewing Company Tap House, or if you're just making your way up through Wisconsin, you're in Minocqua, you can stop at the Minocqua Brewing Company. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And I like that. One beer at a time, or maybe one soda at a time, or one iced tea, whatever it is. It's about getting together and having great conversations with other people who support democracy. Yep, that's right. Support democracy. Right? That's a nonpartisan activity as a citizen of this country. But especially if you're, you know, if you find yourself interested in conversations around supporting public education and bringing kind of all those things together. And, you know, I'm excited about our guest tonight and we're going to jump right into it. So tonight, joining us on Busted Pencils, we have Dr. Amanda Frazier. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction and is a former instructor at the University School in Clemmer College at East Tennessee State University. But you know what's really cool, in addition to those accolades that Dr. Frazier brings, is that Dr. Frazier is not only a researcher, right? She's an educator. She is the embodiment of what we often talk about in the nerd world of education as praxis, theory and practice, right? Her feet are on the ground, but yet she can reach into the clouds where the researchers like to hang out and believe they are the gods and goddesses. You know, Amanda Frazier's work embodies sort of that real life, I love it, blue collar scholar, kind of salt of the earth. What's happening in schools? Why are things the way they are? And in addition to that, what can we do to better prepare teachers to be policymakers who can make a difference? I first learned about her work reading what she had put out there in her public scholarship in Ed Week. I'm stoked to have her here on the show. I think, listener, you're out there listening, you're going to enjoy it. Dr. Amanda Frazier, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Thank you. That's quite an introduction.
Wow. You bring a whole lot to things. So, Dr. Frazier, or I'll just call you Amanda Frazier. You know, Tim and I always chop it up. We tease that whole doctor thing. But at the end of the day, we're teachers. And teachers are, you know, blue-collar professionals in our community. Amanda, tell us a little bit about your story. It's really exciting. I mean, you're a professor, you're a researcher, you're also a teacher, and you have a journey. I think that's an exciting story. Just tell us kind of what brings you to Busted Pencils, but, you know, to the work that you do.
Yeah, I say my background is sort of a parfait of experiences. My first teaching experience was actually in Chicago Public Schools. I don't know if I got a chance to talk with y'all about that before, but I was in my university, which was Central Michigan, working on getting my teaching certification. And I was accepted into this program in Chicago Public Schools where I was a resident for a summer. So I got to spend the summer going to schools in the morning, and I was in a school in the Englewood neighborhood, John Hope High School, which no longer exists. And I would go in the morning to help with the summer school there. And then in the afternoon, they took us to like the rock stars of education. Like I met Jonathan Kozel, Greg Michi, like a lot of people that really influential in social justice education. But what was interesting to me at the time is I was going through my teacher preparation program and I had never heard of No Child Left Behind. I get into this context in Chicago public schools and everybody's freaking out because one of the neighborhood schools was closing under that legislation and consolidating with the school where I was placed for the summer. And so I got to see firsthand the impact of like these accountability policies that I had no idea even existed in my traditional teacher preparation program. And so I think that experience I had back then when I was like 21 years old was like foundational for me because I went on to become a teacher and taught in North Carolina primarily, and saw more of these accountability processes roll out. I talk in some of my Ed Week work about experiencing the teacher evaluation models that used value-added modeling and how that impacted my decision to leave the classroom and pursue a degree in policy. So that was my next step, was I left the classroom after several years, got a degree in education policy because I wanted to learn how to engage with these things that were impacting me as a teacher. Unknown to me, there were other plans in store, and due to a series of family situations, I actually, and I write about this in another Ed Week piece, ended up going back to the classroom just in time for COVID to hit. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually on the ground teaching while we were going through this COVID pandemic. And I've since left the classroom again and am back in teacher education. But these very foundational experiences on how policies and these things that teachers can't control influence our work and influence the profession really drives and motivates everything that I do in my work.
Well, that's awesome, Amanda. And it's like, I always say this, it's like I get the feeling of leaving the classroom, but you never really leave it because now here you are influencing so many people who are becoming teachers. Mm-hmm. So it's still a close relationship with that. And, you know, thank you for what you're out there doing. And kind of coming back to policy for, you know, listener out there, we're always kind of dancing on the line of like, who can make the change? Can teachers in their classrooms and can school leaders make the change? Or is it policy? Do we need more from our legislators? And, you know, can you speak a little bit to that? I mean, you recognize the importance of, you felt it as a teacher. We talked to so many educators who were like, what can I do? And it feels like it's like so bigger than anything I can do in my classroom.
Yeah, I mean, that I think is the very like natural feeling you have as a teacher. Even when I returned to the classroom through COVID, it gave me pause to reflect on that myself, because in Tennessee, we were going through, conflicting policy changes around things like masking and being able to go virtual. And so it really made me think about how interesting it was that here I was somebody who at that point was an established like ed policy researcher who ended up in the classroom and once again was feeling sort of powerless in my role as a teacher to really like have any influence on this. And so what I've been really thinking a lot about now very intentionally is what we're doing in teacher preparation, not just obviously we have like the traditional routes, but in Tennessee, like other places, we're starting to have like job embedded pathways and things where we're certifying folks in the teaching profession while they're actually on the job or in the field. And so trying to think of ways to advocate for making space for people to deal with policies. You know, if you join a union, you might have some like opportunities there. But I think that teachers as a whole, as a profession, need to be given the opportunity to engage with policy, to have the time and space to work through that. And I think oftentimes it's very intentional in the way politicians work to actually exclude teachers. We're often told as teachers that we shouldn't be political, and that is just crazy. As a teacher, you are a street level bureaucrat. Like it or not, you are being tasked with implementing policies that somebody else has decided you need to do. And so you are part of the political system. It's crazy to think that we as teachers shouldn't be allowed to have say in that system when we're carrying that out.
Oh, I love hearing that. In fact, I was just working with a group of teachers today and we were actually having that exact conversation. Like, I know we've been socialized to say things like, oh, I'm not political. Absolutely, we all are. And you absolutely are going into a political position. A little bit different than the most we think about when we talk about political careers. But absolutely, I love how you said that, on the ground. Teachers aren't just agents of change. They're like democracy in action. They're modeling it and teaching what citizenship needs to be like, or ought to be like, or can be like. And with that, all the skills necessary to being a contributing member of our community. Oh, Dr. Frazier, this is so fun to have you on. Callers, listeners, if you're out there and you want to join the conversation, you know, drop us a line, give us a call at Busted Pencils. You can call or text in at 855-752-4842. We'd love to have you join the conversation on Monday here with us. We got Dr. Amanda Frazier here with us on Busted Pencils, talking about policy, about teaching teachers, all the great things. And when we come back in just a moment, we're going to dive into exactly kind of where you were taking us, Amanda, in this idea of, so like, really get the word out there. Let's talk about this. So you don't, like, becoming a teacher isn't the same as it's always been. You don't have to, you know, go to 4 years of an undergrad, although that's one pathway. There are alternate pathways to becoming a teacher. I love that, because I know some of the best educators I've met in my lifetime didn't necessarily know they wanted to be teachers when they were 17, 18, 19 years old. And in fact, they're educators on their job, they're educators out in their community, and they have an affinity towards how they might contribute and shape democracy by empowering young people in the classroom. And so now there's alternative pathways where really great educators can also become teachers in our K-12 system. I love that. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. Remember, callers, give us a call or send us a text, 855-752-4842. Educated educators here on Busted Pencils, Dr. Amanda Frazier and Johnny Lupinacci here with you when we come back. Oh, the conversation is endless, especially when we're here talking about education and especially teacher education and alternate pathways to becoming a teacher. Dr. Frazier, certainly an educated educator, a fellow blue-collar scholar and teacher on the ground at all levels. Amanda, can you talk to us a little bit more about, I get so excited and interested about, like, hey, now there's more than one way to become a teacher. And it's not some nightmare like, wait, I joined for Teach for America and they dropped me into some high need space, which is really important, but with very little support often and no help. Like really, what's this alternate pathways to teachers thing that you were mentioning?
Well, I think it's growing, you know, in my area in Tennessee, like everywhere else, we have a teacher shortage, which is bizarre in the context of, like, when I graduated, there were too many teachers, right? Now we don't have enough people to fill spaces in all areas. It used to just be like math and science and special education that were those high need areas. Now we've got students that are on, like, elementary pathways, and they're getting hired, like, while they're trying to do student teaching. And so in Tennessee, we're starting to see a like growth of job embedded pathways where people are teaching while concurrently attending classes and completing their licensure requirements.
Well, that's awesome. And we're going to come back to that too, Amanda, because I'm super curious and excited. I love hearing about opportunities for people who find themselves interested in education and think they'd be great at being a teacher, learning about how to become a teacher. But we got a caller. Caller Joanne, you're on the line. Let's have you join the show with us.
This is just such a great discussion. I've got a question about teacher unions. As soon as people start talking about teacher unions, political themes come up, and I'm just wondering, are teacher union issues being considered appropriately in public policy channels? And also, how can they be discussed in venues like this without the political leanings that are usually associated with them? Again, fantastic discussion. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks for calling, Joanne. Always love when you call. And, you know, any listener that's listening and gives us a call, we love that you join the conversation. Amanda, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, you know, in Tennessee, which is where I've been most recently, I actually joined the union when I went back in the classroom here in Tennessee. So I joined the Tennessee Education Association. I attended some of their, like, political academies and things that they held in Nashville. And so it's really interesting because growing up in Michigan, which is a, you know, I grew up with automobile worker family, UAW, all of that. You know, there is like a certain impression of what a union is and which side of the political spectrum it falls on. But in Tennessee, you know, the motto is sort of like education is a purple issue. We are predominantly a red state. I mean, there's no way around it. And so the union in Tennessee, their like position and the position of their lobbyists is to back whoever is willing to do things that are in the best interest of public education. And we recently had this voucher movement, right, that was defeated in Tennessee, which was a big deal. And a lot of that had to do, obviously there was like some public outcry around it, but a lot of that had to do with the mobilization of the union. And realistically, they had to get people who were Republicans to agree with them. So the union here in Tennessee is much less politicized than like my impression of the union growing up in Michigan, or even when I was teaching in North Carolina. We had two unions, and the impression was that you joined the one if you were a Democrat and you joined the other if you were a Republican. It's not really like that everywhere, which was new for me.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, again, fellow Michigander here. I mean, you can't really grow up in these blue collar places and states, you know, some of the birthplaces of labor unions, right? So, I mean, literally everything is related to union, you know, union negotiations and things. So you see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'll just echo what Dr. Fraser shared here, also Joanne bringing it up as an important part of the conversation. Regardless of political party affiliation, unions are so important because, you know, we're talking about the insurance and the negotiating around our work. You know, not just in education, but across the board, you know, unions are so important in organizing. And I know that we can also often slip into, well, they make it difficult for X, Y, and Z, or it's complicated. Hey, democracy is messy, right? And no one said there's a shortcut or an easy route to figuring out what are, you know, just and fair working conditions. It's not easy work, but it's important work. So teachers out there, you know, joining your union, being involved in it. Everyone has a voice in a democracy, and that voice is valued, and unions help make sure that's happening. Do they always come through? I mean, they're messy, just like everything else. We know the good, the bad, and ugly, but I say long-term and big picture, the good is really important. Joanne's point, I think, is really also one I want to highlight, is we gotta be sure to include and listen to and take advice from our whether we call them associations or, you know, our unions. It's really important. They're supposed to be in that process, right? The voice of the working group they're representing. So the experience of teachers. So that's also I'm doing a little bit of a finger shake here. Come on, union folks. If you're in that role, you're a rep, or you're in whether it's the Wisconsin Educators Association or Tennessee Educators Association or the AFT or the MEA or the WEA, all over. If you're in that role, remember, first and foremost, that we got to understand, listen, amplify, and echo the experience that teachers are having, because that is actually our role and our duty. Yeah, influence policy, push legislation, but remember, always as representatives of the people on the factory floor. And for us educators, that's in the classroom, right? That's working directly in families and community in that role. So thanks for the call, Joanne. Amanda, I loved your response. We're back on this, you know, and And what an amazing thing. I know our listeners in Wisconsin are like, wait, hold up. Come back to this. Defeated vouchers? So can you mention a little bit about that? And we'll probably take us up to our big break and we'll pick back up there after the break. But this is cool because Wisconsin listeners, remember, big on the ballot all the time and goes back to Act 10 and all these different moments of like really dismantling public education. But the voucher stuff. So Amanda, in Tennessee, wait a minute. So we have some defense against vouchers?
Yeah, well, you know, it actually evolved over the last year. It started with being about creating charter schools, mm-hmm. and the legislation morphed into this. So people who aren't following like closely how legislation changes and over time and following like what politicians are pushing sort of missed this, but they were pushing through the Tennessee Assembly to bring out more charter schools through an affiliation with a very famous private college actually up in Michigan, having Hillsdale College come down and create charter schools in Tennessee for some reason. And there's all sorts of, you can check how donations are made and things to politicians to see how that sort of relationship develops. Mm-hmm. But over the last year and a half, because there was such a negative like outcry against the idea of having this happen, it evolved into vouchers.
Oh yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, Amanda's referring to something that we often call in this discussion dark money, mm-hmm. because it's not necessarily transparent who's funding these, why. And I'll put some quotes up on, I wonder why Hillsdale College and their affiliate charter wants to be in Tennessee, really wants to be everywhere. The privatization of education is the real threat. Amanda Frazier, our guest tonight. Listeners, give us a call, 855-752-482. We come back from the break. A little more with Dr. Frazier. Chop it up. Busted pencils.
This is the end for you, my friend. I can't forgive. I won't forget. This is the end for you, my friend.
Oh, and we are back on the second half of Busted Pencils show this evening, joined by Dr. Amanda Frazier here with us, chopping it up. Certainly an educated educator talking education with us. Listener, you're out there. Feel free to give us a call, 855-752-4842, or you can give us a text. Join the conversation. Caller earlier, Joanne, brought up also, you know, the political affiliations of unions, you know, took Amanda and I on a little bit of a journey through discussing that. But, you know, when Amanda was responding, you brought up, Amanda, you talked about sort of Tennessee being a purple state. And sometimes I live a little bit with my heads in the clouds. I like to believe we're more purple everywhere than we are just red or blue, especially around issues of education and both the pros and the cons. It's like, you can't just assume because there is a Democratic policymaker or somebody who is a Democrat that they're going to act in the interest of public education. You can almost sort of historically in the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, assume the Republican Party is certainly for privatizing it, except this is where I get really optimistic. I've seen more and more like some dissonance around this because there is some exposure or some transparency around, hey, this is against, and you brought this up, this is against our interests in terms of local control, in terms of education, not only being a state right, but some autonomy to districts, superintendents, and community, right? And so, Amanda, can you talk a little bit more about not only Tennessee being a purple state, but you can maybe talk a little bit about research you do, because you talk about this whole why policy matters stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so politically, Tennessee is a red state. Like, we're red. We're bright red. But education as an issue is more purple. And that's how things like the voucher movement get overturned. And so, for instance, it's not published yet, but it's in review. I did a study last year. I did a massive survey of school board members and superintendents across the state. Probably, I think, the only like statewide survey of school board member perspectives around different policy issues. And I had questions on there. Back then, it was charter schools they were pushing, but there were questions on there about different policy initiatives. And there's a lot of pushback from these like local level district actors, including school boards, which are now partisan in Tennessee. We now have laws around school board partisanship in Tennessee. But there was a lot of pushback from even the more people who identified themselves as Republican against some of these issues that we would consider to be like privatization. And that comes down to like this issue of local control. And Republicans are, at face value, supposed to be the party of local control. That's how they're promoting themselves. But yet they often try to push legislation that goes very much against that. And we see that a lot in education. And we see local actors who often are ignored in the political sphere. Like, when's the last time somebody cared about their local school board, you know, and what they think, or who even knows who's on there? But we see a lot of these like local level actors that are actually pushing back on some of these things. And that's a driving force towards defeating things like this voucher movement.
Absolutely. I can't echo that enough. That's how democracy works, right? We express our voice. Everyone's voice is valued. And we think about what are the interests, what are the things that help bring value to our local economies, to our local, you know, communities. And you know what? This is great to talk about, to hear, at least on education, that there's sort of a purple state, right? And I think more of us can identify in that, because it's actually exposing that a lot of these issues that tend to be one party or the other actually are in against, the, especially for the Republican Party right now, I mean, I think it's safe to say, are acting against the interests of local economies, are acting, especially for our rural districts.
Yes.
Thinking about the way that the false promise of privatization and charter isn't bringing value to our rural communities. We already know it's sort of a myth in our urban communities that that's sort of where it got unleashed. Hey, we're going to fix the urban schools. We're going to help all these kids who are underserved in these public schools. We're going to make them charter schools. And, you know, we're going to privatize the system and it's going to improve for them. And they are in need. Well, they haven't gotten a better alternative. Public education is still the answer. We just can't continue to defund it and to, you know, and to gut it. But then our rural communities are saying, hey, wait, we never even got, no one's even here trying to put up, you know, new schools. We're just losing at all ends. We're bleeding out here. And so that's nonpartisan. It's great to hear. And I do get to hear that all the time around this country. People who say, well, I identify as a Republican, but I'm gonna tell you right now, on education, I'm not represented well by my party. And I said, that might be the only place we agree, because me either, as you know, as a sort of lifelong Democrat, I don't feel like the Democratic Party is in a whole lot recently to help out with education. In fact, they're kind of doing harm, maybe not as much harm as sort of the neoconservative Republican, but they're not exactly helping things. So it's sort of like, hey, how do we bring it back together? I love this idea of a purple, all hands on deck. How do we strengthen our schools? Because strengthening our schools means strengthening our democracy. And that's also why they're a battleground for these politics, because the secret is not such a big secret, right? If we're not learning about democracy and we're not practicing it in our schools and we're not valuing it in our schools, then we won't value it writ large. And then it's just sort of carte blanche to do whatever we want as politicians, as sort of corporations and special interest groups, you know, because the public is sort of not sure how it works. So we're kept in the dark, and I'm grateful to hear it. I could go on and on about it, but you know, Amanda, we don't have you all night, and it goes by quickly. And our listeners probably like, enough hot air from Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Let's hear more from Amanda. So Amanda, I'm going to ask you a little bit to tell us a little bit more, especially about your public scholarship, because I just love reading it. And one of the reasons I do is because it embodies both like what it's like to be, you know, a parent, to be an educator, to be a classroom teacher, but to also be a researcher of policy, to see that 10,000 foot view, but to know and have like on the ground experience of what most of us in education have. We're either a parent, we're a community member, or maybe we're a teacher or a school board or a school leader. And so you have this gift of bringing it all together and sharing it. So you talk a little bit more about that, especially related to, you know, this idea you were talking about, you know, I'll kind of call it, I love the title, like assessment backwards. And, mm-hmm. and like, come on, like this couldn't be better low hanging fruit. This is some ass backwards stuff. Mm-hmm. Anna, can you tell us a little bit about your public scholarship? I've hyped it up enough to get out of the way so listener can just enjoy it.
Yeah, Google my name. Yeah, I've got a few things out there. I really began to capitalize on the public scholarship when I unexpectedly found myself back in the classroom in the mess that was COVID, and really decided to embrace the fact that I'm a national board certified teacher. I actually just went through my renewal. So I am like a total credential hog. Okay. So I'm board certified. I've got a PhD in ed policy. And I started to think, well, maybe like I actually could like have, there's some validity to things I could say, because I can talk to the researchers, I can talk to policymakers, I can talk to teachers. And now that I have a child in kindergarten, I can talk as a parent. And here in Tennessee, we have a third grade literacy retention law, which is coming, we're seeing that emerge throughout the United States. And we have a lot of schools that are answering this by putting very rigid scripted curriculums into place. So basically designing everything that their lower elementary teachers are doing to meet the needs of this assessment, particularly for literacy. And so I saw some things as my daughter entered kindergarten last fall that were coming home that really spoke to scholarship that I was doing. I'm like, now this is actually influencing my children. These assessment policies that have been so interesting to me throughout my career as an educator and throughout my career in higher education are now directly influencing my children. And those questions around validity of these assessments and the value of them, in order to be valid, an assessment needs to measure what it's intended to measure, and it needs to provide information that's important for purposes of teaching. And some of these assessments just aren't delivering on that, and yet we're doing them over and over again, often to like the mental detriment of our children. So I did write a piece recently, it just came out, I think on May 1st in Kappen, on the harm in assessment backwards practices, which yes, I did intentionally choose that word. You can abbreviate it to the first three letters and see what I'm really getting at there. But these are practices that have been slowly dominating education since I entered the classroom under No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, and they go back and continue to just kind of dismantle and do harm. It's exciting because it gives, I know you talk about validity, but I'm just thinking it's like, you have such street cred, right? Validity is sort of like this quantitative analysis term that sort of gets reserved. And I'm like, man, I who cares about validity in this context? I want both validity, but I also want street cred. Dr. Yeah. Amanda Fraser here has street cred, educator. Chopping it up with us tonight on Busted Pencils. Listener, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call or shoot us a text, 855-752-4842. We'll try and get you on with us. But coming back around to that, I love, the harm and assessment backwards practices. I like that you intentionally left that low-hanging fruit for us to say, Wait, that's kind of ass backwards. I just like saying that. My producer said today, Anya said, you can say that on there. I said, okay, cool. So we get to say it a few times, but folks, the stuff that Dr. Fraser is sharing here tonight just scratches the surface. It's just a snapshot of the real talk, right? The kind of street cred that both speaks back to policy, but really is on the ground with the experience that we're having in education on so many topics. Like, why is there a teacher shortage? How come opposing the voucher movement is important? And Amanda, I got to ask you too, and we don't have a whole lot of time before we go to break, but I was just having a conversation today again with a couple of teachers, and they were just saying, and I'm so tired of being hammered by test scores and this concept of learning loss. They're like, I'm working harder than I've ever been. I feel like my students, they do have some impacts from COVID, but like they're not doing badly, but like everything keeps telling me that we're all failing. Do you have any advice for that teacher out there? And you got 3 minutes and then we'll go to break. This is a quick version.
Well, look, teachers, as long as there have been teachers, there has been somebody who has been trying to hold teachers accountable for something in some way. And it just so happens that our country, through all its many different systems of education, have decided to try to measure teaching in a certain way, and have tried to continuously narrow this down to this finite, like, grain of sand image of what a student does or does not know down to individual skills and individual teachers. But the thing that was most interesting to me is when I left the classroom and went into my ed policy program, I learned that the people who design these systems, the people who design these assessments and the psychometrics that go behind like the measuring of this, very, very smart people also think these things are flawed. And so it's not the research that's supporting what we're doing. It's not the teachers that are supporting what we're doing. It's something else. And so I think it's worth continuing to push back on this idea that these assessments are the valid way of measuring what we do in our work as teachers. They're not inherently bad. It's the way they're being used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're a school leader out there, communicating that with your teachers, having those kinds of conversations like Dr. Frazier has, you know, brought up here tonight with us, you know, just remember, in part, as part of our duty, our civic duty as, you know, educated educators, is having these conversations and taking, you know, an assertive role in the political landscape of how and what's happening in our schools. We had guest Dr. Amanda Frazier with us tonight. Honored to have you, Amanda. Thanks for busting pencils with us tonight. One of the really exciting things about the conversation that we get to keep having, and that's me putting you on the spot, Amanda. I'd love for you to come back on sometime, because the intersection of all these things, I mean, we could talk all night, we could talk all week, but that's what we do here at Busted Pencils. 5 days a week is we chop it up. We talk about what's happening in education, both on the ground, but then, you know, at the universities and the research hallways, and then also on the legislative hallways. So where all those things comes together, educated educator tonight, Amanda Frazier, Dr. Amanda Frazier, Google her name, check out her stuff, read her work, and join us on Busted Pencils 5 days a week. Busted Pencils, when we come back. We are back here, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education tonight. We had a wonderful guest, Dr. Amanda Frazier. Listener, if you're out there and you'd like to give us a call and chop it up with me on the close of the show, give us a call or shoot us a text, 855-752-4842. Wow, I'm still really excited and honored to have had Dr. Amanda Frazier on here. You know, truly salt of the earth, expert on many things, researcher, teacher, educator, as she shared, parent, and all things that sort of embody where we take up arms to really, you know, be part of a conversation that speaks back to policy that is shaping and influencing our schools. That couldn't be a more important conversation to have as often as we can have it. And that's why we have it 5 days a week here, the civic media on Busted Pencils. So, you know, just thinking about things, though, I know, you know, Tim is not able to join us tonight. He's in transport from another planet back to Earth. So we'll have him back in our you probably may have seen northern lights some places if you're out there, listener. That's due to Tim's electromagnetic travel. We'll bring Dr. Ethan Siegel on to explain the electromagnetic travel that Tim is part of. So Tim will be back with us as soon as that sort of electromagnetic storm calms down a little bit and he can re-enter, you know, planet Earth in this time period. Yes, that's also saying that Tim is doing some incredible time travel as well. No, I'm getting silly and I digress, but have Anya with me here tonight. We had Dr. Amanda Frazier, of course, you listener out there, you were listening, Joanne, the caller, great stuff. But you know what? It's also been an exciting season change in education. This is a time of year where teacher, you're out there. I mean, like, whew, man, I remember May, like we are just weeks away from summer, unless you're in one of those unique programs where you go year round and you have your, you know, intermittent breaks, which side note, I'm kind of a fan of, even though I did enjoy summer off. As a teacher, it's never really summer off. And every teacher out there knows It's like the only time of the year you can actually go to the bank during banking hours. You can schedule all of your doctor's appointments to hear all the ways that you're unhealthy because, you know, you don't hydrate enough. You don't use the bathroom enough. You're eating poorly. And you're like, I work in a school. Do you know what the conditions are like in there? So, but the season is changing for educators and it's a shift right now of hang on tight, get through till summer, you know, figure out how we send young people off with a really good memory of the experience of all the things they learned in our classrooms. And we had Dr. Amanda Fraser on tonight talking about, you know, her parting words. If you were watching on YouTube or you catch the live, you hear the sort of behind the scenes when we go to break. But, you know, her parting words are ones I'd like to re-bring back in. And of course, we'll have Dr. Fraser back on. But, you know, she said as an educator and a researcher and all those things, kind of her bottom line or her litmus test is do no harm. You know, and this is that time of year where we're like, hey, do no harm and let's transition into the next break. And what that means for so many teachers and big, big appreciation going out to teachers. Last week was Teacher Appreciation Week. I can't tell you how many of us as educators understand that the next 5 weeks matter so much, right? Sometimes it might be 6 weeks, maybe it's 4 weeks, but roughly, you know, the transition I'm talking about. And parents, if you're a listener out there and you're not a teacher, thinking about that these last few weeks, it's hard. It is hard to get your kids to school. It is hard to get them ready for school. It is hard. They are about done, right? They are spent. Teachers, you're extra patient these weeks. And remember, these last memories that these young folks have with you, they last. They leave a lasting impact. So don't dwell on what we didn't learn yet or don't stress out. Yeah, I'm telling you, Dr. Johnny on Busted Pencils is saying, don't stress out about what you didn't teach and try and cram it all in. You're not going to get it into the last few weeks. And in fact, you're likely to do more damage and harm than you would keeping the pace, keeping everybody safe, keeping everybody enjoying the classroom, stay to the structure of the year you've had, and give a nice smooth landing. You think about it like this is the time where we're like, hey, sit down in your seat, buckle up, and prepare for landing. That's what we're doing in classrooms around most around this whole country, right? So listener, if you're out there, show some grace and some big appreciation to teachers and also to the learners because they're tired. They're like, can you please just get us to summer break already? So, you know, it's really important. I just got to throw that shout out there because this is also the time of year where us educators can sometimes really click into ignoring our own health, forgetting our own emotional needs and our well-being. So be balanced. Okay, I'm here to tell you, be balanced. Few more weeks, and then not a few more weeks until it's time off. A few more weeks until you can breathe a little, right? In those few weeks, it's the hardest time of the school year to be extra patient, to be extra kind, and to remember you're going to have lasting impact on these young people. So keep up the great work out there, teachers. Appreciate you and appreciate your commitment to the well-being of your students and to yourselves and to each other. So reach out to a teacher you know and say, hey, we got this. A few more weeks, take a breather, reset, but let's bring these kids in for the smoothest landing possible. That said, it is one of the hardest jobs in the world to be a teacher, but I couldn't think of a more rewarding one. So keep up that great work. You know, we're going to talk about it all week long here on Busted Pencils. So join us every day, the same time, Monday through Friday and Wednesday. We're going to come back to this teacher well-being. Okay, because we have our great teachers at Educators Amplified. They love to talk about that. And you know, where's a good place you can talk about these conversations? If you're in Madison or you're up in Minocqua, you can swing through the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out minocquabrewingcompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. You know, it's nice about the MBC. You know what? There's never a last beer. There's always a place you can go grab another beer, bring some friends, hang out, talk shop, especially if you're talking about defending public education. What else can you do? You can hang out with your friends there. You can have a good time. You can hoist them up high. Cheers. And even special teaser coming up, you can catch some listening parties of Busted Pencils. So we'll have more information about that. But hey, appreciate you. This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators, busting pencils with you every day. Join us again tomorrow. Looking forward to it. We're out.